Welcome to Urban Forum Northwest with your host, Eddie Rye. I have the distinct honor today of having as my first guest, Sheriff Patty Cole Tindall, who is appointed to become the sheriff, I think was May 6th. She had been the interim sheriff since November of 2021. So Sheriff Cole Tindall, welcome to Urban Forum Northwest. I'd like to start out with just having you tell the people a little bit about your background, where you grew up, where you went to school, stuff like that, so they'll know who you are.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate it. And so let me just say a little bit about who I am. Patty Cole Tindall. I am now the sheriff of King County. I just want to say I'm the 35th sheriff. I'm the first Black sheriff for King County. And of course, the first Black female sheriff for King County. So wanted to put that out there because it's not lost on me that this is a moment that has not happened in previously. So I am have over 30 years of public service, some of it in law enforcement, some of it out. I actually just recently, 2015, I returned to law enforcement. So I had 5 years in the beginning of my career, attended the academy. With that, I was a special agent with the Washington State Gambling Commission, came to King County in 1998, served in a number of capacities here. Notable would be in 2010, Executive Constantine. He appointed me as the labor director for the county. In that role, my office was responsible for all collective bargaining. Most county employees here are in a union, all but 1,000 are not. And I also ran the Office of Law Enforcement Oversight. And that's what really gave me into the King County Sheriff's Office. And then Sheriff John Urquhart at that time said, you know, I don't know how, I don't know when, but I want you to come work for me. And at that time I thought, wow, I could end my career, my public service career, as I started it in law enforcement. So I did let him know I was interested. And in October of 2015, I joined the sheriff's office as a division chief. And let me just say a little bit about that. When I was brought in, I was brought in and elevated to division chief, which was a position that 35 other people felt that they should have been considered for. So it was a difficult entry into the sheriff's office, and I had my work cut out for me, but I proved myself. I came in, I learned the agency, I proved my worth and showed folks that I was here to contribute. And so I was a division chief for about 5 years. Then I also was asked to be the undersheriff. I was appointed by the last sheriff as the undersheriff. And then the voters of King County changed and decided they no longer wanted an elected sheriff and they wanted an appointed sheriff. And so Sheriff Mitzi Johantnik, her term ended in December of 21, and Executive Constantine appointed me as the interim sheriff. And I will say at that time, I wasn't going to apply. I mean, with the various interviews I had, I said, look, I am good with the number two spot. I am not going to apply to be the sheriff. But as I took over and we started to do the work to rebuild relationships, I would say with the community, with council, with the executive, but also within the agency, that I was getting a lot of support and people asking me, wouldn't I reconsider? Because I was exactly who we needed, who this agency needed to move us forward. And so right before the closing date, I let the executive know I'm going to apply, and I threw my name in the ring. I was one of the finalists, and then I was appointed in May, as you said. So it's been a good 30-year career. I am excited, though, about the next few years, because obviously we have a lot of work to do here in the sheriff's office.
Why don't you share with us where you're from, where you went to high school, where you went to college, things like that?
Yeah, of course. So I am a military brat. My dad is retired Air Force, and we moved here in 1981. It was the year after Mount St. Helens erupted. I remember that because we were like, oh no, we're moving to that place with the volcano. So we moved here. I went to Clover Park High School. I was a junior in high school when we moved here, which is not easy moving in the middle of your junior year. but graduated in 1982 And then I went to Central Washington University. I got my undergraduate degree there in public relations and business administration. And then I got married, moved to Europe. My husband was an officer in the Army and we were in Germany. And while I was there, I received my master's degree from a university called Troy State University, which they have them on military bases and professors that are on sabbatical come and teach at the various bases in Europe. I was in class with pilots and other officers, but I was the only spouse, but received my master's degree in public administration. So that's a little bit about my formal education. And then the fact that, you know, I was born in France. My dad met my mom when he was stationed there, and we moved somewhat, but didn't move a lot. And basically my family, my parents are still with me, thank goodness. And we they stayed here, and this is where I've been and raised my children.
What are some of the major challenges you have as being the sheriff? We know that there's a very contentious relationship between law enforcement and a lot of people upset about the unlawful law enforcement. And the most egregious case that was videoed was the George Floyd situation. We saw in Seattle where it looked as though the leaders of the city threw their hands up and just turned police precincts over to the people, so to speak. So I was just wondering, how do you perceive moving forward in rebuilding this trust? I'm not saying it's not already there, because we have people that I communicate with regularly, like Reverend Harriet Walden. I hope you know her.
Yes, I do.
Police accountability. And she's probably like, when it comes down to police reform and that kind of thing, I lean on Reverend Harriet Walden because she is my mentor and my leader when it comes down to police community relations.
Well, thank you for that question, because I do think it's an important one. And as law enforcement, we certainly need to rebuild and gain the trust of the community. And as you indicated, with the when George Floyd was murdered, and everyone here, every officer saw that and said, that is appalling. We are not trained that way. I mean, clearly what happened should not have happened. And subsequently, the community, I mean, there was already distrust, but the community as a whole, I think, started to distrust police more. And with the subsequent protests that happened, right? That was a difficult summer for everybody. And the relationship between law enforcement and the community certainly declined from there. So I see my responsibility as rebuilding, gaining public trust, and how I see doing that. I mean, for me, it's about working with the community. First of all, being in the community, meeting with the community, being transparent about what we do. And we currently have dashboards on our website that have our uses of force, as well as our internal affairs investigations. All that material is there for people to look at. That's a form of transparency. We embrace oversight, the King County Office of Law Enforcement Oversight. We'll talk a little bit about, hopefully, these audits that came out the past few weeks that said that officers here basically stop or use force on Black and brown people more than others, more than white people and Asian people. So those are all challenges. The other challenge is staffing. I am down, 120 deputies. So when I'm thinking about my responsibility, which is, the RCW, that the law, state law says I'm the keeper of the peace in the county. Well, I got to have people to be able to do that. And, with the gun violence and just crime on the uptick, we have fewer police officers out there. And we know that officer presence is a deterrent to crime. It doesn't mean it gets rid of it, but it is a deterrent. And so we are working really, really hard to try to, retain the good people I do have, but also recruit people who will want to come to this agency. But I will note that it's nine months, it's the same time to have a baby, before what somebody we hire is able to go out on the street and do the work on their own. So that's a long process. And then they still have a probation period that they serve for a year after that. So it's a lot, right? It's a long period of time. police reform. I will say here at the King County Sheriff's Office, many of the laws that were passed in 21 that took effect in 21 stemmed from our own policy. We have always been a leader, as has SPD, in what I would say are policies that maybe some other law enforcement agencies find too restrictive. But I really believe we needed some of the police reform legislation. I do think some of it went too far because it took away our ability to stop, apprehend, deal with people in crisis. So I do think there should be some, the pendulum needs to move back, but not back to where it was. So I recognize and appreciate the need for police reform, but that's another challenge that we have here because my folks every day go out and try to keep our communities safe. And in some cases, they cannot because the law prohibits them from interacting or engaging, or the jails don't take them, or the prosecutor doesn't charge on the person. But I am all about this. I really think we need to figure out what is the source? Why is somebody committing a crime in the first place? Is it because they don't have food? Is it they don't have, you know, their basic needs met? Or is it just because they're going to commit crimes and they know, A, we don't pursue them anymore, yeah, and there's no sanction?
Sheriff, you know, what I'd like to say is that I really think, and I suggest this to the chief of police of Seattle SPD, I think it's really, you know, we're talking about and bonuses to get people to sign up. And I really think that Joint Base Lewis McChord, and you have been in the military family yourself, I think that's a prime focus for people who are disciplined. But they do have some Proud Boys and some oath keepers in the military. We have to understand that too. But I really think that the focus on those folks who are trained, and I mean, making $7,500 all the soldiers down at Fort Lewis will go for that. So, but I tell you one thing, I want to make sure that this program will be available for you if something comes up that you want to get out to the community, get out to the public, because like I said, you've been around for quite a while. We want to give you every opportunity to succeed. We want to work with you as a partner. But I really think people are missing out on a recruitment opportunity because somebody's been making $1,000 or $2,000 a month. All of a sudden you say, here's 25 grand and you can make $100,000 a year with overtime. They will jump all over that. And there's some people I don't think you have to work that hard with. You got to be careful with the screening process.
Yes.
Like I said, there are a lot of sympathizers, MAGA sympathizers, Oath Keepers and Proud Boys that have that leaning. And we saw that not only in the military, but we saw that on a construction site a couple of weeks ago in Redmond, Washington, at a building being built for Facebook, where a Black man had a noose hung over his workstation, and it hung there for 6 hours. And luckily, Representative Sharon Tomiko Santos contacted the powers that be at Facebook to say, yeah, you can say it's the union guy or the construction company, but you're the owner. And right now we have to stop having these owners, including the county and the city and Department of Transportation, Sound Transit, Port, all of them. They're the owners. They have to enforce the law, just like you have to enforce the law in terms of crime. They have to enforce the law in terms of opportunity. Now, like I said, I would like to have you on frequently. I was hoping that Detective Cookie would be on the line. You probably know her already, but
I know her. Yes.
Okay. That's good. So,
yes. So I appreciate what you said about the military. You are right. I say this, two things. These people in the military know how to get to work on time, and they know how to follow instructions. Those are two good things that we can use. And like you said, the pay that we have, I mean, but I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It is dangerous work. But the military can be dangerous too.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You're absolutely right. Well, Sheriff Cole Tindall, I really thank you for giving us your time today, introducing you to my listening audience. And
yes.
Like I said, they can hear this the rest of the week on my podcast and also on Alexa. And as things develop, we'll have you back on. So we certainly appreciate you.
Thank you. Can I just say one last thing?
Go right ahead.
So we do have a signing bonus. Ours is only $15,000 for a lateral, but $7,500 for an entry. So like these people in the military that have never been a police officer. And we offer every single deputy a $5,000 referral bonus for every person they refer. So a current deputy, if they referred five people, can get $25,000.
What about if Eddie Rye goes and recruits?
You know what? I'm
Would I get that much money?
Somebody mentioned to me, well, why don't you have a referral bonus for the public? I said, well, I'm going to look into that.
Yeah, I think you need to look into it. I have no problems going down there and meeting with some of the brothers and sisters in the military who want to do the right thing and get paid. Okay.
So thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. So
okay.
We'll see you again real soon. Okay. Thank you, Sheriff. We appreciate you.
Bye.
Eric, we'll take a break and come back with our next guest after this, please.
Hi, my name is Mian Rice, the Diversity of Contracting Director for the Port of Seattle. As a public agency, the Port of Seattle serves the community, and our investments should benefit everyone who lives and works here. The Port is committed to equity, diversity, and inclusion, and to leveling the playing field. That means continuing to open doors to contracting opportunities to all, especially women and minority-owned and disadvantaged businesses. How can you participate? List your business in Vendor Connect, a database of contractors. Attend PortGen workshops to learn how to do business with the port. Learn more about contracting opportunities at portseattle.org. For more information on operating a concessions at Seattle Tacoma International Airport, visit lease.ctacshops.com.
Why sit in bumper-to-bumper traffic when you can hop on Link Light Rail and fly by the gridlock? It's a smoother, easier, stress-free way to get where you want to go. Whether you're heading north to Capitol Hill and the University of Washington or south to Columbia City, Tukwila, and the airport, Link Light Rail will get you there quickly and safely. And if you have an ORCA card, even better. Just tap on the yellow card reader when you get on and listen for the beep to let you know your card has been accepted. Then tap your card reader again once you've reached your destination and listen for the double beep to let you know you've tapped off correctly. To find the closest Link Light Rail station or to learn how to get an ORCA card, just go to soundtransit.org and type Link Light Rail into the search bar. Sound Transit's Link Light Rail. Just another way that Sound Transit is powering progress.
Make us part of your daily routine. Alternative Talk, 1150.
Okay, Eddie, right back. We're having a couple of little difficulties here, but we will be getting it together. But first of all, I want to say that I had the distinguished pleasure and honor of meeting Ramon Bryant Braxton, who was the artistic director and the conductor for the sensational, fantastic, outstanding Juneteenth celebration. And it was called Songs of Black Folk, Music of Resistance and Hope. And it will be, video will be available soon. It's being also right now, it's being edited. So also I want you to remember, if you look at the facts today, you'll see where Joe Staten, the distinguished leader of CAY and outstanding person and athlete, will be funeralized at the end of the month of July 30th, I would say. And then Brenda Frost, who is the mother of Erica Frost, Lavelle Frost, Omar, and Jamil. And their father is George Frost. And her service will be on Friday, July 1st. No, that's the viewing, Friday, July 1st. Her service will be on July 2nd. It will be at a church in Federal Way, and I will give you that information later. It's the Christ the King Bible Study, 354-448 11th Avenue Southwest in Federal Way. My condolences go out to that family. Also is a sister of my good friend, Curtis Wells, and the kid's dad is George Frost. Do we have Claude on? Claude, I appreciate you coming on, brother. Claude Murphy is on with us right now. He attended the Poor People's Campaign back in DC last weekend. And so why don't you just share with our listeners exactly how that went down, Claude?
Eddie, we had the Poor People's Campaign is a campaign actually started back in 1967 with Dr. King. This program or campaign was supposed to start initially in 1968, but Dr. King was assassinated. And his wife, Coretta King, and Reverend Abernathy continued the Poor People's Campaign, and this has been going on since 1967. This year, They had between closely around 150,000 people that participated in the Poor People's Campaign this year in Washington, D.C. Also in Washington, D.C., what I didn't understand, but now that I know, that there was, there is actually about 140 million people in America that is in poverty. And this is one of the issues that they were discussing in Washington, D.C. We had not only Dr. Bernice King, which is Dr. King's daughter and CEO of King Center, we had Reverend Barber that spoke at both events, which was one was on that Friday at the Freedom Plaza, and he spoke at the convention at the Capitol. It was one heck of an event, man. They had numerous testimonies there on that initial day, which was the 18th, Juneteenth. They had celebrated the Juneteenth. And actually the program lasted about 5 hours, and we also had Dr. Cornel West, who spoke at that event. The event basically is centered around, and what we talked about is that we demand voting rights for all. In systemic racism, we talked about housing for all, health care for all, and that, you know, there were several major topics that they discussed at that convention. So it was a great day. The weather was great. And I appreciate Dr. Barber because he is an eloquent speaker. And let me tell you, people just gathered there just to hear him. Now, let me, I'm going to put it, indicate this as well. There were four TVs, big TV screens. A lot of them were for elders who were unable to stand and participate in the event for the 5 hours. So it was an event, and let me, they had it set up perfect where you had enough space, you had enough porta potties. That was a main issue there, but it was a very, very eventful event, and I appreciated it, and I was glad that I went to this event.
Yeah, now Claude, let's move on to the other subject where we were in attendance at a meeting yesterday on behalf of Black carpenter James Myers. And there was an overwhelming turnout of support for him. As a matter of fact, Representative Santos, in a conversation with her, who attended the meeting yesterday, said that the owners have to be held responsible. We can't allow for a contractor to allow their employees to engage in racist acts. And you know, this not only happened on James Myers' site, but also about 6 months ago, according to Roberto Jordan, there was also a noose found at a North End Seattle Fire Department station. So there seems to be all of a sudden a rash of hate coming up, and the MAGAs need to know they're not in power anymore. As a matter of fact, some of them might be going to jail. So would you just share with our listeners some of the folks who were in attendance and kind of encapsulate that?
Yeah, the NAACP was in attendance. I know that Jamal Middlebrook, he was one of the organizers for the Carpenters Union. There was several individuals, prominent individuals that are a part of the trades here in the area that's a part of ORPAC. And they gathered, roughly there was about 30 or 40 people that were in attendance yesterday that was in support of this young man. And I know Representative Sanchez made a comment, but I would like to really expound on that comment that she made regarding this young man and what he had gone through. One of the things that she had indicated was that owners need to be held accountable. And I actually believe, and I know for sure, owners need to be, and they need to be stiffly fined for activities of this nature. And this would at least put some pressure on not only the owners knowing that I'm being fined for some things that these folks are doing, these union folks are doing, and they can put a stop to it. I know that we need to also pass some legislation that will also eliminate these hate crimes and these types of crimes on the job, you know. I feel like this young man has been victimized, and not only him, but there's so many other these young kids. I've talked to these young kids, and they're saying a lot of them are being discouraged to even complete the apprenticeship programs. A lot of them are saying that they go through similar stuff like this and that they don't really want to be a part of it. So this is something that has been done on numerous occasions. A lot of it has not been. We don't know about a lot of the incidents that have occurred, but we need to do something about it. And I know that the NAACP is going to actually look into this so that we can at least try to work and get these types of hate crimes out of the workplace. We don't need this, ma'am. And this has been a practice for quite a while, and a lot of our kids, like I said, do not want to be a part of it. And they talk about this constantly, that we are being harassed. My son is a part of the trades, and he says that, this happened, but you have to at least let these folks know, this is not, don't come to me with that. And just let them know that I'm not here. I'm here to work. I'm not here to be discouraged or anything. And you don't know me, so I'm not going to be a part of your game plan. So, I mean, we have to do something about it, Eddie. We definitely have to do something.
Clive, what I did do is when I got the picture of the noose, I did send it to the county executive, Dow Constantine, the mayor, Bruce Harrell, the Congressman Adam Smith, the Congressman, Congresswoman Marilyn Strickland. And they all, it pretty much had the same statement, how disgusting it was and unacceptable it was. But, I'm Representative Santos. The owners have got to take responsibility. You know, no longer can you point the finger at a contractor when a racist incident occurs on that contractor's job. And a matter of fact, on Tuesday, I couldn't believe this. I went to a funeral at a Black church, and a company by the name of Prime Construction was hosting an event on church property and didn't have one Black face in the crowd. Now, I have nothing against the Latinos who were there. They also had a mariachi band playing. And I'm just saying is that we have a responsibility. When people don't hire our people, we can't work with them. And so I'm gonna check and see on some of these. I want everybody else to start taking notice of these publicly funded contracts. If you don't see a Black person on there, make the call to somebody to make sure that we have advocates out there. But as I hear you too, Claude, about the harassment these young folks are facing, we have to deal with that as well.
Oh, Eddie, can I make one other comment here? And BMB, my understanding is that it is not a union organization. And I know that this young man is a part of the Carpenters Union, but this company is not a union company. And my question also is, who is signing, who was signing that young man's check, you know. So when we are non-union, a lot of stuff like this happen and they can get away with it. So that was my understanding. And when I did a little research yesterday, I found out that BMB is not a union company. So that's something that we also need to look into as well.
Well, like I said, I still think that the owners have got to, I agree with Representative Santos, the owners have got to be responsible. They've got to be responsible because they're paying the way for the contractor. And if these folks keep practicing these, keep involved and engaging in discriminatory practices, there got to be a point where these owners have got to say no. And we've got to put, I'm driving up and down I-5 and 405 and all the construction. I think I've seen one black face, and that was on I-90 on a Sound Transit job. So, I mean, they said, oh, yeah, well, maybe blacks are just working in invisible positions, invisible like not being there. So as a member on the King County labor, that's all thing too. I want to mention that Larry Brown and April Sims also got a copy of the news. And I did get a response from Larry Brown's office, as well as a couple of others. But what can be done to ensure that our folks don't face this kind of, practice? Now, we said B&B is not a union company. There's been nooses. As a matter of fact, one gentleman, he was on the University of Washington Sound Transit. This is many years ago. He got laid off, and the foreman had a swastika on his hand. So we know that it's embedded in there. Because, you know, we go back to the 80s with 60s, 70s, 80s with Tyree Scott, when we had to get a federal court order from Judge Lindbergh, I think it was a federal district court, for 5 building trade unions to admit blacks. And it didn't say, might have said blacks. And right now, you don't hardly see any blacks out there. And I think a lot of it has to do with what you're saying in terms of the hostile work environment. That has got to stop. And the owners have got to be, like right now, for example, I don't think that there's any monitoring done on various public contracts, because when I-200 was misapplied and misrepresented, a lot of people felt like they had no longer had to do any oversight or any site visits. As a matter of fact, it's my understanding, a lot of the prime contractors told public site visit people from the city, county, and state and other entities to go back to where they came from. And that's just totally unacceptable.
Yeah, but also when you look at the Tyree Scott era, we had quite a few black contractors. Now today, these bigger or larger companies have taken that away from us because, okay, we are subcontracting. And in the meantime, they're not paying us on time so that we can pay our employees on time, which is why we now maybe have 10 black contracting companies in the city now, you know? So that's a form of discrimination right there as well, you know? So we need to at least do some serious, and as a matter of fact, when you talked about it yesterday, you said something about a press conference. We need to at least expose and make sure that, and I know that a lot of folks know about this, but we need to at least have a press conference and let these folks know that we are not playing and we're taking this very, very seriously. And, you know, so that's one of the things that you had indicated, and that's one of the things that I believe that need to happen today. You know, we need to have a press conference on this and let these folks know that we are tired and we're not going to take this no longer. Yeah, we're not going to.
Well, there was an article that I seen in the Seattle Times, and also there's an article in the Seattle Medium newspaper. So people are picking it up, and I've also heard it on a couple of other radio stations where they mentioned this, because it is a very egregious kind of act. So we do have the president of the United Black Christian Clergy on the line, who was James Massey, was one of the students. And that's Reverend Lawrence Willis. Reverend Willis, you on?
Yes, sir.
Okay, yeah. So we just wanted you to do a little overview since you, the gentleman, went through your program. If you could just share a little bit about that with us, we certainly would appreciate it.
Okay. I don't know where you want me to start, but the young man.
Well, Cloud covered the press conference. We'll have to talk about that. If you could just talk about his efforts, what he did to go through the pre-apprenticeship program and then become almost close to being a journeyman before he got the noose incident.
Okay, yeah. The young man was an awesome young man, and his desire was to get into the trades and he didn't know if he wanted to be labor, carpenter, but he went through our pre-apprenticeship program, and he gravitated to being a carpenter. And so as a carpenter, he went through our pre-apprenticeship program at the Seattle Vocational, now the McKinney Center. And he graduated our program, excellent young man, then went to the Carpenters Apprenticeship Program and excelled there and just graduated about 2 weeks ago and now is a journeyman carpenter.
Well, that's what we need to hear. We definitely needed to hear that. Let's see, I thought we had a Detective Cookie on the line. You know, they're building a park for her. Oh, we do have her. Detective Cookie.
Yes, hi.
How you doing? I want to say, first of all, congratulations. And Reverend Willis got some contractors to build your park. So we understand you're going to have a chess park. You've been doing a lot of good work. So we don't have as much time as I'd like to because we have so many technical problems getting together. But why don't you take a couple of minutes and talk about the chess, how you came up with the idea, and what do you have on the horizon?
Okay. I'm outside as well, and it's kind of noisy out here. So I started the chess club in 2006. The year before, my supervisor wanted me to put together something for the community youngster. So what I did, I put together a basketball game with the teenagers, and they got to play police officers. Now, these police officers, some of them was straight out of college. You know, they used to play on their college basketball team. And they were pretty good. They had their own little little team where they played other police officers and firefighters. So got some of them together. We played this game at the Rainier Community Center. And it was going well. The police was winning. They was doing a real good job. Then halftime came. And once those teenagers got back out there, they was full of energy. They never got tired. The officers, they had worn themselves out. They barely could make it back up the court. And so the kids, they end up winning that game. And it was just so much fun. They got to see officers in a different capacity. The following year, my supervisor wanted me to do something again. So since that worked, and that was a lot of fun, I decided to do that again. But when I came to the teenagers and told them we're going to do another basketball game, they told me they didn't want to do another basketball game and that they're not just about basketball. And so I asked them, I said, well, what would you like to do? And one or two raised their hands and said, how about a chess tournament? And now in my head, I can't play chess, don't like the game. It's hard for me to learn it when I try. I actually didn't think I was smart enough for chess. Chess is for real smart people. And that was my mentality. And so I told them, okay, even though I couldn't do it, I said, okay, we'll do that. And so I had the Seattle Parks Department. They gave me a few chess boards and we played at one of the local chess parks. I'm not chess park, one of the local Seattle parks. And the kids said they were ready and they were going to do this. So when we got the tournament started, only about two kids knew how to play chess. The other 20 something just stood around and watched. And I'm asking them, why did you guys say you want a chess tournament if you don't know how to play chess? They didn't have an answer for that. And so I just was looking at them and I'm saying, good thing I had some Connect Fours and those kind of games out as well. But just looking at the kids with a desire to play chess, and they didn't know how, but in my head, they really wanted to. They wanted to learn how to play chess. So I wanted to fix that problem. So I asked them, if I was to start a chess club, would they come? About 20-something said, yes, we will come. And so what I did, I got a little funding from the Seattle Foundation and also from the Seattle Police Foundation to buy some chess boards and to hire an instructor, because I didn't know how to play. And so—
Detective Cookie.
Yeah.
You know, we had a technical difficulty. We need to have you back on to have the hear the whole story, but we're out of time today.
Oh, no.
But I'm on every Thursday now.
Okay. So
anytime I need to get you on the right time, because I had your time designated. But I want to thank you, and I want to thank Claude Burfick and Pastor Ricky Willis. We have to take a break. So if you want to come back next week and talk some more, we can do that, man.
I do. I want to come back.
Okay, now you got the correct link, Zoom link, so you should be able to get on with no problem. So we'll continue the discussion next week.
All righty. I'll see everybody next Thursday.
All right now, you sure will. Okay, Eric, let's take this break and come back with...
Hi, my name is Mian Rice, the Diversity of Contracting Director for the Port of Seattle. As a public agency, the Port of Seattle serves the community, and our investments should benefit everyone who lives and works here. The Port is committed to equity, diversity, and inclusion, and to leveling the playing field. That means continuing to open doors to contracting opportunities to all, especially women and minority-owned and disadvantaged businesses. How can you participate? List your business in Vendor Connect, a database of contractors. Attend PortGen workshops to learn how to do business with the port. Learn more about contracting opportunities at portseattle.org. For more information on operating a concessions at Seattle-Tacoma International Airport, visit lease.ctacshops.com.
Why sit in bumper-to-bumper traffic when you can hop on Link Light Rail and fly by the gridlock? It's a smoother, easier, stress-free way to get where you want to go. Whether you're heading north to Capitol Hill and the University of Washington or south to Columbia City, Tukwila, and the airport, Link Light Rail will get you there quickly and safely. And if you have an ORCA card, even better. Just tap on the yellow card reader when you get on and listen for the beep to let you know your card has been accepted. Then tap your card reader again once you've reached your destination and listen for the double beep to let you know you've tapped off correctly. To find the closest Link Light Rail station or to learn how to get an ORCA card, just go to soundtransit.org and type Link Light Rail into the search bar. Sound Transit's Link Light Rail. Just another way that Sound Transit is powering progress.
Wherever you go, Alternative Talk 1150 is here for you.
But my next guest is a superstar by the name of Dre's, and he has a big performance coming up, and he's been doing some fantastics around the city for a long time. And even though he is in LA, he is very mobile because he's in Seattle right now, I believe. If not, he'll be here Saturday. So welcome to Urban Forum once again, nephew. And why don't you bring our listeners up to date on what's going to be happening on July 2nd.
All right. Hey, Papa Rye. I am in Seattle, just landed today. So I'm happy to be here on July 2nd at the Collective in downtown Seattle. I am doing an event called the Dean Dindi. Right. So Dean Dindi in Zimbabwe, or in Shona language, which is from Zimbabwe, it means party. So we gonna party. I wanted to bring a African experience, something really different to the Northwest. So we've got food being provided by Mojito, which is a Black-owned restaurant out of the North End. So Mojito will be doing food. We've got DJ Lace Cadence, who is on KXP as their number one Afrobeat DJ. So he's gonna be spinning Afrobeat music, Zimbabwean music, I'm a piano music. It's just going to be like a beautiful Black experience. I can't think of a better way to celebrate Black Independence Day, because that's what we still celebrating Black Independence. So that's what we're going to celebrate on this 4th of July weekend. And then, of course, I'm going to hit the stage and give people a sneak preview of my upcoming album titled African American. So I'm looking forward to it.
That's great. Would you share with our listeners some of the other stuff that you recorded and some of the places where you performed?
Doing a lot of recording. So I recently won an Emmy Award, and the Emmy Award was for a theme song that I wrote for the Converge morning show. So I wrote a song called Seattle's Own that was used as their morning show. In addition to that, I've been writing for a lot of shows. I have over 200 placements on shows like The Masked Singer, ESPN Sports Center, NFL Network, Love and Hip Hop. I just did Black Ink. If you go to Netflix right now, Snoop Dogg just released a new comedy special. Well, coming out the gate when he first comes out on stage, that's my song that he comes out to. So Inventing Anna on Netflix. I mean, it's a whole lot of shows, man. So I've been blessed to have the opportunity to write music for some of your favorite television shows. And man, it's just been awesome.
It sounds like it. Eric, do we have anything by Dre's? What is the name of that one that you use on Converge Media?
Mike by the white Samoji diamonds for the wedding ring. I don't understand those who don't support their own. I can tell you what I'm on, but you probably wouldn't know I'm different with mine. Watch came from Tally and Twine, freshly fitted from Cthulhu. I shop Zuvu online, ladies. Why go to Asians when you can go down to powder wigs from there? When there's royal strands here, I need you to care. Leave that Victoria's Secret there for that Savage Fenty. Matter of fact, a couple pair. Nah, this ain't no trim. Black business, how I live. From my wife to the kid, whole squad know what it is. I bank with one united. I stream.
That's good. That's it. There you go. That's him, y'all. So now if they go to Alexa or to your power, how can they people access your music like right now?
So you can go anywhere that music streams, Apple Music, Spotify, Amazon Music, and there's music up there. You can always follow me across most platforms. I am the Dre's Experience, or just Dre's Experience. And by Dre's is D-R-A-Z-E and Experience. So if you look that up, find me, the music is there. But if you just go on Spotify, just look at Dre's, D-R-A-Z-E, you'll find it all there.
I will have to ask you, because, you know, we've been hearing about a lot of shootings at nightclub kind of venues and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any kind of experience like that anywhere you've played?
You know what? No, I have not. Thank God. You know, like sometimes people like to act like, I'd love to say it's because what I put out there is positive energy and all these other things. Maybe, I don't know, but it could happen anywhere. You know what I mean? Like two people see each other who have a beef or something like that. You know, it could happen at any point, but thank God it hasn't. And I do believe, like we used to throw parties back in the day. And I'll tell you this, there was a psychology to how we ended the night. So if we ended the night with like some gangster rap or hip hop, something would definitely pop off or have a better chance of a fight or a shooting or something like that. But when we started ending all of our club nights with like R&B and old school, we'd throw on at the end of the night some Teddy Pendergrass, something that you're like, wait, what's that doing? Well, we know what we was doing. We was trying to cool out the vibe and the mood. And every time we did that, it smoothed things out and there was really never a problem. So that became kind of a tactic that a lot of us used to try to quell the issues. So,
well, you know, that maybe that's something that somebody can pick up and use in the future when they have these venues to have some of my music on that was peaceful about romance, chasing and trying to catch instead of catching bullets and popping somebody, you know.
Hey, so, I'm trying to bring it back. I'm bringing it back through hip hop though. I'm gonna bring, if you listen to the content, the one you guys just heard was Building Black Wealth. It was about supporting Black owned businesses and how you can spend your money. I've got music about a whole lot of things and not one of them is about shooting or nothing like that. Like all of it is about, a lot of it is conscious and we're talking about issues going on today. But for me, more so issues that impact Black people, right? Like that's who I am. So I can't really speak to nobody else's issue. That's yours. I want to talk to my people about what we going through and how we endure what we face here in this country.
Can you once again share your upcoming event on Saturday, July 2nd?
Saturday, July 2nd, down at the Collective Seattle, I will be performing. It is the Dean Dindi. If you want to hear a sneak peek of my new album, African American, that's coming out soon, you want to get down to the Dean Dindi this Saturday, the Collective Seattle. We got DJ Lace Cadence, who's going to be spinning Afrobeat music. It's going to be a complete vibe. Food is provided by Mojito. It's just going to be a beautiful time. Oh, and it's free. So if you go to my wall right now on Facebook or Instagram, I have the link to the Dean Dindi. You just RSVP there, and it's free, so it should be a great time. Free food. Now, you're going to have to buy your own drink if that's what you want to do, but we're going to provide some food for you at the very least.
Well, I want to say that your daughter and my granddaughter, my adopted granddaughter, just so proud of her to get that call from her on Father's Day. And she was in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I remember taking that girl to Skyway Christian Center, to Birchie, taking a lunch to St. Therese. Matter of fact, I took a lunch to Birchie too, and to Garfield. And before I know it, boy, she had, "Hey, Nyasha, do you think your papa will spring for some more?" And she was treating four or five, but I want her to make sure. And so she's ready to open her own shop, or just open her own shop. And yes, that's great. Nothing but success in that family.
Yes, the name of her shop is Nourish. It's going to be on Melrose. It's a beautiful, she's an esthetician. So if ladies, if you're ever in LA, and fellas, if you want to get a wax, get a facial or whatever. I know I got to get mine, Papa. You got to get yours too. She don't make us both get, we both got to get facials. So figure it out, man. She'll get you right.
Well, when I get down there, I'm going to sure visit the shop. You know that I'm proud of that young lady. And I also want to, Larry Williams, a grandfather, I know he's real proud too, as well as a grandmother, and also Janae Punkin. I know she's real pleased with everything. So thank you very much, brother. I hope to see you Saturday. But you know, I'll be barbecuing for the 4th, so I'm going to see where I am. Hope I'm not up to my elbows and smoking stuff. But anyway, whatever
I do. I know you love me, man. It's good. I know you love me. It's all good. You know what I mean? Chill out. I might come grab a plate or something, you know?
And you know, I'll definitely have two or three plates ready for you, brother. Okay. Thank you very much. Dre's, we appreciate you and continued success to you.
Thank you.
Okay, Eric, I want to give a shout out to my supporters, the City of Seattle's Purchasing and Construction Services Office with Liz Alzier. Sound Transit, Civil Rights, Office of Civil Rights, Diversity and Inclusion. The boss is John Tay Robinson. The Port of Seattle's Diversity Contracting Office. Me and Rice is in charge, working with Lawrence and Josie. And once again, please pick up the Facts newspaper and read about the distinguished career of Joe Staton, who passed away suddenly on the 20th. And he will be funeralized on July 30th. It will be at Mount Zion Baptist Church. And we'll come up with the time a little later, but I do want people to read about him and also extend condolences to the family of Brenda Ann Frost and to her children, Lavelle, Omar, Jamil Frost, and also to Frank Taylor, her husband. So that she will be funeralized on Saturday, July 2nd, 2022. That will be at 10 o'clock a.m. At the church in Federal Way, and I'm trying to find that it's at the Christ the King Bible Fellowship, 35448 11th Avenue Southwest in Federal Way. And I want to thank Eric for finding that music, that rap by Dre's, and we'll talk with you again next week. Thanks, Eric. Have a good weekend.